So I'm a few months into using Bare Face skincare every day, and like so many of you who have tried these products, I am loving them. The first thing I noticed was a change in the texture of my skin and the size of my pores, but my favorite thing about Bare Face is that I noticed my skin glowing in a way it hasn't in years. It just looks healthier. I've gone from a bathroom counter scattered with a hodgepodge of products to a simple skincare regimen that's easy to be consistent with every day. Bare Face was founded by nurse practitioner Jordan Harper, who is passionate about science-backed skincare education, and she shares the best tips over on the Bare Face Instagram page. You can even text her team of skincare specialists for a complimentary consult to answer any questions. They will recommend exactly what you need while you enjoy the comfort of your couch. Their number is on their Bare Face Instagram, and I'll put it in the show notes as well. They're big fans of the podcast, and they have offered Got It From My Mama listeners 15% off their first purchase by using code MAMMA15. That's MOMMA15. I am so glad you're back with us this week. I was so impacted by the conversation that you are about to listen to today, and I've been really excited to share it with you. What I thought would be an interview about raising two high-profile, successful, record-breaking athletic sons was so much more. I really feel like the Lord led the conversation where He did, because Sonia's testimony is so important for moms and women to hear. Not only is Sonia, first of all, gorgeous, she is a rock star of a mom, and you are going to love her story and the advice she shares. So, Sonia, it is so fun to get to watch an NBA game, and when that camera pans over to you, I think personally as a mom, it's the most entertaining part of the game, whether it's frustration or passion or just fun. I mean, what is it like for you to be in those stands cheering on those boys you're so proud of?
At first, it's fun being just a spectator and a fan of the game. And so you go into it like all excited about that. And then once the whistle kind of blows for the jump ball and to get started, you're like, breathe, just breathe. And so a lot of the animations and actions that people see me doing in the stands is really just a release of just like nervousness and anxious. You just want your child to do well, you know, no matter right. how old they are, you want them to do well. And we're a very competitive family, so we always want to win. So, so that plays into it as well. But, you know, it's fun. It's just, it's fun. It's all the great emotions that you would have watching, you know, your child, like I said, at any age, just do what they love to do and be yeah. successful at it.
Exactly. And you certainly have been fortunate to see a lot of success with both the boys and your daughter as well. And does yeah. that ever change though? Does it feel the same, like that adrenaline rush that you get before the jump ball, before tip off? Compared to maybe when they were playing in high school or even at a smaller stage?
Actually, no, it is the exact same. I mean, I've gone through stages of having to really, I think maybe hone in how that comes out, that nervousness for them. High school, I had to start knitting at first when they were in high school because I was just, you know, I'm like yelling at them and I'm kind of being that parent that coaches from the stands, you know,
yeah,
not even really realizing it in the moment. But then, you know, the coach telling me, hey, I need them to pay attention to me. And
So you actually got reprimanded by the coach.
I got reprimanded to then even keeping the scorebook because I'm like, if I'm on at the table, I can't yell. Like I've got to learn how to just kind of keep this stuff in. So that
good distraction.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you literally knit or was that an example you were using at some point? Were you actually knitting in the stands?
Yes.
what were you making?
Knitting. Nothing really, because I really wasn't that good at it. I think I started a scarf at the time and just to try to find something else to just kind of, you know, distract me from the nervousness of
yeah,
watching
exactly.
them.
Well, I'm super excited to get to talk about motherhood today with a mom mm-hmm. that I certainly admire a lot. And I know that just as a person of faith, my heart beams when I see someone who's been given such an incredibly large platform to see them speak about the Lord in such a gracious way. It must make you so proud when you see your voice, whether it's in a press conference or maybe it's a write-up in an article or something, but to see them give the glory to the Lord in the way that they do must mean so much to you.
It actually does. And when I'm listening to you say that, Jennifer, it's like I get teary-eyed and emotional because, you know, we pour into our children. And, you know, scripture tells us to train them in the way they should go. When they're older, they will not depart from it. And sometimes we don't necessarily see the fruits of that, the prayers, you know, going to church, the scriptures, the, you know, I would prayer walk their bedrooms in our house, and we would do devotions. And you sometimes don't know, you just sometimes just don't have the faith that you should, that mm-hmm, it all, mm-hmm. because we're always looking for evidence all the time and proof, that we're being good parents too. And so you look at it and sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know what's happening.
Hopefully some of that soaked in somewhere, right? That's all we can do.
Or sometimes you just fear that you did too much. Like maybe you, you know, discourage them from wanting to even have a personal relationship with Christ and with God through Christ. So it's, you know, it's when you finally see that and the fruits and they have their own personal relationship, it just, I mean, there's no words to even describe it. Like I said, I just get emotional when I talk about it because that's only God. It's only the Holy Spirit that really can bring that about. And I say, you know, scripture says his word never returns to him void. So I would always hold on to that. His word is not going to return him void. And so, yes, it's such a blessing to be able to see it.
About a year ago, you put out this book. It is called Fierce Love, a memoir of family, faith, and purpose. Did you ever think I would be introducing you as an author?
Absolutely not. Like, I have the fear of writing, like, period. Just because of a college professor that marked up my freshman paper, first one I ever turned in, and all these red marks. And so ever since then, I've been like so fearful of writing. And so when God gave me this kind of passion for telling the story, it was, really? Why me? What? Nobody's going to want to hear this. But, you know, the process was, you know, amazing. And I tell everybody, when God starts something, he's going to finish it. And if we want to be a part of it, then we need to get on board. And so that it just kind of happened. So,
yeah. Well, I wish you could see my copy of the book. There's so many pages dog-eared and things underlined that I love, but I'm going to read you a little portion today because it's one of my favorite pieces of mom advice that I feel like you give in the book. And it so perfectly ties in to your experience as a mom. But this is on page 44. It says, you need swagger. You even have to take on the body language of swagger, including some quiet power in your voice. You have to say without saying, I got this. I see a connection to sports in every aspect of my life, including being a mother. To be a mom, I believe you have to wake up every morning, put on your game face and say, let's do this. I'm ready no matter what happens. There exists no more crucial career. It's so true. It's so true. Amen. Yeah. So did you feel like you walked that path with some swagger?
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
I tried. And I think it kind of worked. I think it kind of worked because I would hear through the grapevine with some of my kids' friends at high school, oh, your mom's tough. Oh, your mom, like, I'm like, why is everybody afraid of me? Like, I don't get it. I'm really nice and approachable. So I think so. And not in a cocky way. I just.
Right.
You know, I was very intentional about it every day and just, you know, wanted my children to understand how important they were to me. And so I did that through, you know, the parenting and the choices and decisions that I made being their mom and implementing things in our home.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you had a good balance from reading the book and just, you know, your family's very public. So we've seen a lot of it. And of course, what we see are these boys with incredible grit and determination and work ethic and all the things that we all hope to raise a child that they would have. But it sounds like you walked a really good line of setting very clear boundaries for your kids. And that helped to almost get like the gutter ball, keep everything in the lines, right?
Yes, it did. And some of that came from, you know, Montessori, which I ran my school for 29 years, a Christian Montessori school. And one of the training principles with Montessori is you never threaten anything. You have to follow through. So if you set a boundary, there has to be a consequence for it. And you can't, you know, waver from that, or, you know, you lose that respect. You lose respect when you do that. And I think that's across any relationships that we have, that if we don't follow through on things. And so some things were easier. They were just natural consequences that came with. I hate using the word disobedience, but it really is that. And then there were some that, you know, I always tried to make it real. Like, this isn't just because mom wants you to, but, you know, this is what could happen. And yes, there's a 50-50 chance maybe that it won't, but do you want to take that chance? And so it was, to me, it was more so thematic than it was the actual incident in that moment, because I wanted them to understand some people might make a different decision, get away with it for a little while, but eventually it's coming back. So
Well, and a good example of that is the story. I know you've told it many times, but I think it was Seth that didn't do his part with the chores. He didn't do the dishes. And talking about thematic, it wasn't that he didn't do the dishes. It was that he didn't play his role in the family, that you needed him to do his thing. And you had no fear in calling up that coach and saying he won't be playing in this pretty important tournament.
Well, I had lots of fear. I mean, I try to tell people now, even when I talk about these things and you held the book up, my stomach just starts shaking like this. And it's kind of like the game, like going to the game and watching them. It's like I was nervous every day as a parent, because just like most parents, you just don't want to mess up. You don't want to mess your children up. And, you know, if we didn't rear them, the world would do it. And so, you know, I was just, there was a lot of fear a little bit in, definitely in my parenting and my approach to it. So when I think about that, yes, I was like, Sonia, do you really need to do that? I mean, is it really all that? I was like, yeah, it is. Cause I'm rearing young, and in our situation, young Black men that really need to know things aren't, and being in our home with their dad, having a great career and saying things aren't just going to be handed to you. Your dad had to work for
sure.
Yes. So you have got to understand the importance of family and your role in it.
Right. And I think, you know, you're probably a lot like me. Our kids have grown up very differently than we probably, how we grew up, as far as, you know, they've been able to have nice things and do the camps, you know, just do all the things that maybe my family struggled with when I was a kid, because I grew up in a more underprivileged situation. So how do you find that line of wanting them to enjoy all these things in life, but also respect and understand the privilege that it is?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Another quote from the book, I love this one. Life constantly throws you curveballs. How you deal with those pretty much determines the quality of your life. That should be like on a board printed and hung in every kid's room, I think. It's all about our attitude and our response to things, right?
Yes. Yes. And we talk about in our family, and it came from Dell, is...
That is thunder. Do you hear the thunder?
I was like,
that's the storm. So for our listeners, it's a very stormy, rainy day in Nashville. And I was just telling Sonia before we got started that the reason it's so dark behind me in the middle of the day is because this big storm's moving through and it's here. So that's what you're hearing, Sonia.
I was like, okay, get my microphone.
It's not.
But yeah, it's called Next Play. He would always say Next Play. And I'm actually taking tennis lessons right now for the first time ever in my life. And I just used that the other day. It was like, I looked at a ball that went way out of bounds, and he hit me another tennis ball really quickly. And he was like, you got to keep going. You're focused on what you did wrong. And so, you know, that's the same thing in the same vein, is that it's the next play. If you're too busy looking at what you just did wrong, you're not going to be ready for what's next. And don't focus on that. focus on what you need to do better the next time. So always forward thinking, because, you know, in life we can get stuck. You can get stuck in what we talked about, the evidence of what just happened by a choice or an interaction. And we just got to keep moving, keep moving.
Such good advice. Tell me more about, I know that you were very diligent to make sure that you guys were in the Word with your kids when they were growing up, and how important that was. You really made it a routine part of their day. But I want to hear more about you when your kids were dealing with tough stuff, or maybe even you were going into their rooms and the scripture that you would place under their mattresses. I just think that's such, again, a physical evidence and representation of the power of the Word that you believe and how you would share that with them.
Well, I still do that. So my children have, they for some reason have adopted. We moved a lot in Charlotte. We lived there for 10 years and I mean for 30 years. And I think we moved maybe 12 times in 30 years in the same city.
Wow.
So it's funny, even as adults, when they started their families, I would go visit, take care of grandbabies and kind of listen and feel in the spirit. And then I'd write scriptures and put it on their mattresses. And so when they would go to move, they'd be like, "Mom, what?" And I was like, sorry, they found scriptures. But yeah, it, to me, I would put scriptures on the wall and have them painted on the wall. And we would do our devotions every morning. And I really, I guess that's just my faith. I believe that the Word never returns to Him void. And a lot of times we use too many words in our parenting, and we don't pray enough, but we talk and fuss and preach a lot. And so I try to not do that when they got to certain ages, because I knew they would start tuning me out. So I was just like, "Lord, this is for you."
Yeah. Let's face it, we're all learning as we go as parents as well. So tell me about the boys when they were younger in particular, the competitiveness. I've heard them say that things could get heated, plenty of fights, mom broke out, which I was glad to hear, because as a mom of two boys, I loved hearing that it was pretty normal.
Absolutely normal every day. And I think it just comes down to, you know, the instinctual, you know, of just being humans, and this, you know, the oldest son, the middle child, the youngest, and, you know, and I would always hear, "This isn't fair. Like, y'all treat Stephen this way." My second son, "You treat Stephen this way." And then my daughter came along, "Well, they didn't have to do this. You didn't do that." And so, and we're very, Dell and I, we were athletes. And so our home was just competitive, period. So on top of the sibling rivalry, we're just competitive, right? And so the balance of trying to figure out how to let that play itself out and not stifle it, because, you know, they're going to need it in the real world. But to also try to turn it inward and try to make it more compete with yourself and less of others. Because if you can do that, you're going to give it the best that you have. There's always going to be somebody who's better than you. Always in this world. So you can't, again, look at the evidence that you've and let it be that you fell because somebody else did better in the moment or whatever, or won a game. Or you have to look at, if you gave it all that you had, that's all you're in control of. And so, yeah, through all those, it was a balance of trying to figure out, let them go. They fight in the classroom. You're sending them home to your dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's the rule. You don't get favoritism. So that was a lot of it, is just showing them that, you know, we don't show favoritism. And part of not showing favoritism means we treat you the same, but we treat you differently. So treating you differently is treating you the same, because we try to meet you where you are. And you can't compare, because they were all different. You know, their personalities were different, and you have to figure out how to reach them in different ways. So
a little bit parenting style that changes for each of the three to kind of meet them where they are. And take me back to 2009, that first set of brothers ever to play in the conference game in the finals, what that was like. It was probably fun to look forward to, one stop, both boys there. And it was such a unique situation. Tell me a little bit about what that was like as mom.
When it was over, I mean, I literally just, my daughter came over and, mom, all excited. And she went to hug me, and I just burst out in tears. I was just like, stress release. I'm glad this is over, because who do you choose? And it's really weird, because I have to be very careful about this. So it's like I wanted Seth to do some things against Stefan, and they both couldn't win. The only easy part about that was that it was in the same places. But then there were things like, do I sit with one daughter-in-law versus the other daughter-in-law? You know, how are we going to do this? And, you know, it's a blessing to have them both at that level, mm-hmm. but I don't know.
There's only one of you. So, I mean,
I'm still speechless about it. I was just like, this was a little traumatic for me. Yeah.
Well, those are aspects that I hadn't really thought about. Not only like cheering them on, knowing they're competing against each other, but the whole, what side do I sit on and which family member do I sit with? I guess that was stressful.
Yeah. And if we all sit together, then the, you know, one wife is like sad. I mean, it was a lot. Yeah. It was a lot.
It's so good to know you've got the same family drama that a lot of moms do. That's for sure. And then I heard, I think Steph said it, that y'all flipped a coin initially about who was wearing what jersey and how you were going to do that. And then you ditched that and went with the half and half.
Yes. My best friend solved that for me. She was like, I got you. We're going to make half and half jerseys and both of y'all wear half of each one. And I was like, that's perfect.
Yes. So you were you feeling for a Donna Kelsey? Oh, that was lightning. Did you hear that?
Yes.
I'm sorry. That scared me. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh. I think we're all good, but I saw it and heard it. So it's some kind of storm. I'm sorry. Let me pick that back up. I was thinking that you probably had some sympathy for Donna Kelsey this year with both boys in the Super Bowl, because you're one of the few moms who would know what that type of feeling would feel like.
You know, and I give her kudos to her. I think she handled that wonderfully. But I mm-hmm. also think that's a testament to her relationship with her boys, because they handled it really well. Like, they were like, let's just make this event. We're going to like celebrate our mom and together. And they joked about it. And so, again, you can just tell the relationship that she has with them is awesome, because the respect that they have for her and just the love of wanting her to be a part of that whole event. Just, I mean, that brought me to tears too. I was just like, she handled that way better than I did.
Yeah, you're so right. That's a great way to look at that too. It does show the relationship she had with her boys, and they were so great about it and just yes. kind of like made the most of a really special moment with her.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So the book is, to me, part wisdom and knowledge and all of the things, but it's also a lot of your testimony, which you're very vulnerable in sharing. Did you have that intention when you started the book that you would share some very private parts of your life, including pregnancy that you had before you had your first son? Or did you feel the Lord speaking to you and that was important for you to share that with other women?
I did not intend for that when I first, the concept of the book, it really was, the concept originally was showing the hand of God, hearing the voice of God and how the hand of God had been in every kind of decision leading up to my children choosing the colleges they were going to, and just the incidents that were happening that solidified where they were going to go to college, each one of mm-hmm. them. And so that mm-hmm. was kind of the concept of what the book originally was going to be. But then as I began to write it, you kind of almost had to go back to, okay, what was driving my decisions in that, not only listening to the voice of God, but why was I even seeking God the way that I was during this time and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of like was peeling the onion and getting back, which I did not realize. I thought, let's just tell a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as we began to do it, it was just like, whoa, like you can't tell this and not tell this. And it was just like, God was just like, nope, this is what's going to happen. And I had lots of people who like read the outline of the book and was like, I wouldn't talk about that. Like people close to me. Why would you need? Yeah.
They gave you the advice of don't talk about it.
Yeah.
They couldn't see the value in it, probably.
They couldn't see the value in it per se, but it was also during a time politically when it was going to mm-hmm. be the election. And there was a lot of like cultural unrest. And when I talk about, you know, the Ku Klux Klan in Virginia, and I talk about then the abortion that I had, and it was like, you don't want people coming at you. They're just going to come at you. And why do you want that? Like, why do you, first of all, writing the book is great, but then why do you want to be attacked for writing this book? And I had to really think about it. Like, I was like, maybe I shouldn't do it because I am living a great life. I don't really need money per se. And I tried to not do it. Like, I was like, all right, I'm not going to do it. And then God just kept saying, yes, you are. You're going to do it. Yes, you are. And I'm like, I tried to cancel it 3 times. And the last time I was like, oh gosh, then I'm going to have to call my kids and ask for money because I have to pay back.
Pay back the publisher. Wow. Yeah. So you were very nervous about putting it out in general, just because of some of those things that were in it. But you're right. I mean, how do you tell your story of God's faithfulness in your life without talking about a couple of major events that really shaped you to be the person that you are?
Yes. You couldn't, because even when I talked about like my daughter and, and just how I related to her, I had to like come from a place of, I don't want this for you. So what I had or I was faced with and decisions I had to make, I wanted to try and protect her from some of that. And so sharing it with her, and then also sharing it with other, just having faith. I just had to let go and let God do with this book what he wanted to do with it. And it's still hard. Like, it's still hard. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your vulnerability. And I think that that your story and, you know, again, it almost makes me teary to talk about it, but there's a reason that the Lord's given your family the platform that he has, because I mean, the way that you guys are shining a light for him so brightly and, you know, even just the things that you've walked through, and then now you're using your story, I guess people say using your story for his glory, right?
Yes. That's right.
Yeah. You know, you tell in the book that, you know, you were considering an abortion in your pregnancy with Steph, and you look now at what God's done with his life. I bet that is, you know, quite the miracle for you to have been a part of.
Yes. And I think that was a moment of, in the beginning of my true personal walk with the Lord, was him being born and the blessing just of him and the process that we went through, me having him by myself. Dell wasn't there, and not having a delivery room, and being out in the hallway, and that's just like every step of the way. It was like, there was no glory. There was nothing beautiful really about that whole delivery except for him.
Except that baby boy.
Yeah. And that process. So, you know, it was just like, all right, God's getting my attention in a lot of ways. And, you know, to look now and see what they're doing, see what he's doing, him and his wife, Aisha, and then their family, and Seth and Callie and Sadell and Damien. It's just, somebody asked me the other day, if I knew what I knew now, would I have done different, would I have had the first abortion? And I said, you know, that's a fair question, because I know there's a lot of women out there who are struggling with this right now in this decision. And I said, I have to give myself some grace and say, I did what I did with what I had and what I knew and what was in front of me. And I think it would be unfair to that 19-year-old girl, young woman, to say, no, I wouldn't have done that. You were wrong. You were bad. You were wrong. I said, because she didn't know that. Now, knowing now what I know now, I knew I didn't have enough faith. I just did not have enough faith
in yourself,
in myself. And I didn't have that deep relationship with God to know that he would have me no matter what happened.
Yep.
And so I'm learning a lot. I have a tattoo on the back of my neck. It's Hebrew for grace and mercy. It's called Chem, Chem. And I'm learning that we all need to just give ourselves, not excuses, but some grace and mercy, because that's the Father we serve, a very gracious and merciful Father that says, you did it this time. You can make a different decision the next time, because I'm with you to give you the strength and wisdom and knowledge to be able to make a different decision. So I like to always encourage people when I do my speaking, that part, that we can always second guess ourselves. But that always leads to guilt. Yeah. And we need to next play. We need to move on.
Next play. That's right. Next play. Okay. Next play. I want to get to your grittiness, which I'll ask you at the end, because I ask every guest, what do you think your kids got from their mama? But one of the things is definitely that grit and determination. And you really showed that by having a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old and going back and finishing that college degree. And obviously your role in the Montessori school, a lot of people may not know, but you ran a school for almost 30 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. 29. Yeah. Right.
Education is super important to you, including your own.
Yes. Yes, it is. You know what? I think people say, how do you do it? They used to say, how did you do that? And I said, yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. I think, you're just being young and you just got that drive, just like, the energy that kids have when they're younger. And you just did it. I didn't really doubt myself, but when I made a decision, it takes me a long time to make decisions. But when I make them, I am hell bent.
You're all in.
I'm all in, like crazy all in. So, I think that's what it was. It was like, I'm finishing my degree and I'm going to do it, and didn't stop till I did it. And I didn't look at anything around me like, no, we're going to do this right now. But I was also blessed to have a lot of support to do it. So that makes a difference too.
Yeah. I had to tap into that village a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So what would you say, and you can kind of talk about all of them, of course, your daughter at the end, I love it. I've heard you say that you were worried to death about having a girl, because I felt the same way. I just felt like I was a boy mom and meant to be. And so when the second one was a boy, I was almost like, okay, I can do this. Uh-huh. But you had your boys. So start with the oldest, Stefan, and tell us, what do you think from his character, his personality? What did he get from you?
He's very compassionate. He wants to see the best out of everyone, and he never gives up on anyone. Like, he's always like, you can do it. So that's just like me. Like, I am a nurturer by nature, and it's just like, I just want people to just believe in themselves. I think he gets that from me.
What about Seth?
Oh Lord, Seth.
If you're not using the Core 4 products for long-term skin health, you're likely very underwhelmed by the results of your skincare routine. Think of building your skincare routine like building a house. You need a solid foundation, otherwise your house will collapse. The same thing applies to your skin. If you're not using the Core 4, your skin lacks the resources to be healthy. So what are the Core 4 products? A vitamin C, SPF, an exfoliant, and a retinoid. These 4 products protect, repair, and strengthen the skin, and they are the first 4 products that are really worth investing in because they are the powerhouse of your routine. Barefaced makes it easy to get started with these 4 essentials with their Bare Necessities Bundle. This bundle can be customized to your skin type when you take the 5-minute skin quiz on barefaced.com. They even break down exactly how to use each product and how to introduce them into your routine. Super simple and effective. Hey, got it from my mama listeners. Get a discount code. Use MAMA15 to get 15% off your first barefaced purchase.
Seth. Jennifer, this is good.
Uh-oh.
These questions asked. I would say with Seth, he's very firm in his convictions. Like, once he's there, no change in his mind, and he's full force and full force forward. And it is what it is. And that's it.
Okay. Very, okay. Good or bad, right?
Like, good.
Exactly. And what about your beautiful daughter?
Oh, my daughter. She is sassy.
Oh my God. She heard that from you, right?
She is sassy. And she's got that swagger. Like she, uh-huh. She is a force to be reckoned with. And sometimes I look at her and she's like, she's kind of the mother of everyone. And she's like, now mom, now we really need to talk about these things. And that's me. It's like, no, we all need to talk about this. And well, did you think about this perspective, mom? And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't want to think about that.
So she can bring a little logic into the situation sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, but sassy, I love it. Like yeah. She just makes me smile. Yeah. She just makes me smile. Like
you kind of experienced the empty nest, all the kids getting married, then a grandmother, you walked through the valleys of a divorce, everything, you know, all in a matter of a few short years. How would you say that you're reinventing yourself? And what does this next look like for you? Not as mom, not as wife, not all the titles that you've always had, but now just for you, Sonia.
Wow. You said all that and I'm like, I'm done with this interview. That was a lot. Oh, Lord. I think what's next for me right now is just really like this book has been so healing for me because I got to go back all the way back to, you know, my childhood and high school, college, young adulthood, having my kids, having my family. And this book came about the year that Del and we separated, my separation. So
had you already started the book?
Yes.
At the time? Oh, the book was already in the works.
Yes.
Okay. So you probably had big decisions to make about what you include and what you don't and all that.
Well, and
right?
Even if it was going to even be like having confidence to continue to do it because I didn't know what my identity would be without being married and, you know, the MBA. Like I just didn't know what was going to come at me and if people would want to hear it if I wasn't his wife or, you know. Mm. And so I went through hell really, like emotionally. So right now, what's next for me really is I'm just in the moment. I'm learning to be in the moment and God, I mean, my faith has deepened so much because things happened that I never would expect to happen. People left my life that I never thought would leave my life. And so it's like, my father, like he's been there with me this whole time and he's carried me through all of this. Mm-hmm. So the beautiful thing is being in the moment, establishing different kind of relationships with my children, enjoying my grandchildren, enjoying the book. And I'm still, as you can tell, I'm still healing through this whole process. So still allowing mm-hmm. myself to heal. And then, Lord, what do you want me to do next? I mean, he's always given me a fire and a passion for orphanages and foster children. And so I think that's going to come about soon. Like, I think he's preparing me soon for that. But I've got to get through this first so I can be, you know, productive for what's next. So I feel like I'm doing well. I feel like I'm about like on the, and I'm in the red zone right now.
There you go. You're another sports analogy, right?
I'm in the red zone. I'm in the red
zone. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's just something that I'm finding that myself and so many other women my age, I turned 50 this past year and, you know, I am very guilty of wrapping up my identity in my family, in my mm-hmm. job, in my work, in how other people see me, as opposed to figuring out kind of the what's next for me. And right. So that's kind of the heart of where that question came from is that's, you've been known as your kid's mom, you know, mm-hmm. your entire life as Del's wife, as, and yeah. so trying to figure out, you know, what's next for you. But when you were saying that, I kept going back to next play though. God's got that next play for you, right?
Yes.
Your own advice.
Yes.
For sure.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. I just got to keep mm-hmm. looking, you know, we just got to be in yeah. the moment and not get ahead of anything. And, as scripture says, be content. What's that scripture? Just about being content where we mm-hmm. are. You know, it doesn't yes. mean settling. It just means being confident that where we are right now is where we're supposed to be. And that's yeah. my mantra every day. Just get up every day. What's today?
Yeah. Put on, you got that back to the very beginning of our conversation, back to the, you know, let's do this. Put your swagger and your, yes. you know, your confident face on, no matter what we're doing. It may not be parenting, but whatever we're doing, to take your own advice right there and just tell yourself, we're going to do this. Let's do it, right?
Exactly.
Well, it's been so delightful to talk to you. And I just knew, even before reading the book and just what little I knew about your family, that you were just a really incredible person and a mom and, you know, someone that I would love to get to just talk to. And I'm really excited to share this conversation. I think your heart for other people and using your story is a brave thing to do. And
Thank you.
Going to help a lot of people. So you're definitely an inspiring mom. So,
well, thank you very much, Jennifer. I really appreciate it, and continue blessings for your podcast and what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really fun to share these stories. I will ask you if you have any advice for me. I've got a son in the music spotlight. He's touring right now with Luke Bryan and out on the road and all of the things that come with having a kid in the spotlight. If you have any mm-hmm. advice you would end with to share with me,
I would just say be mom. Like, let him know that no matter what, no matter who else he comes across in contact with, when he comes in contact with you, he's come in contact with his mom. And and that's stabilizing for them, because there's so many people telling them what they should do, shouldn't do, giving advice, and really all they want is you. And so I had to learn that. Like, I was like, I gotta protect you. And they were like, yes, but I need mom. I just need to talk to you about other things and this right. kind of thing. So just be you and just know that, I mean, I tell people all the time, they say, well, what do you think your role is now? And I said, my role is to try and be present as much as I can, and then pray, prayer and presence. That's it. That's my role now.
Oh, I'm writing that down right now. Prayer and presence is my two biggest jobs.
Yes.
That's good advice, Sonia.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Well, thank you. And Luke's one of our good friends. And so
I
was telling him that I was talking with you today. So,
oh, do you told Luke that we were going to talk today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so fun. Oh, yeah. He's so kind. And Connor, my youngest one, the one that's the music artist, he played baseball with Luke's nephew, Till. And so that's how we got to know their family.
Okay.
Was about the time that Till came to live with them, and they went to school together for a little bit and played baseball. And I remember when Connor got his first publishing deal, he was still in high school when all this started happening, and he'd be like talking to Luke through the fence while he was putting on his catching gear. And, you know, they talk about all of that. So
now, how old is your son?
Just good people. 22.
I was like, you 22. Look like you're 22. Oh my goodness. Wow.
That's what I want to ask you, are the beauty tips when we are off there. I'm going to actually stop this recording so we can just...
I know. Why did I stop the recording just when she was about to share all the beauty tips? But I can tell you this, Sonia Curry is beautiful on the outside because of that light that shines within. She's really an awesome person, and I hope that you were blessed by this conversation. Prayers and presence, mamas. We got this. I want to share with you a miracle skincare product that works overnight. Just kidding. If anyone says that to you, run. Skincare takes time and consistency. However, let me tell you about Barefaced Toning Pads. They don't work overnight, but you can start seeing results as soon as 2 weeks after using them. Okay, so who needs them? Everyone. They're skin smoothing pads that help prevent breakouts, remove dull, dead skin, and improve the absorption of your skincare products. Basically, they reveal a more even, healthy glow with every swipe. They're Barefaced's best-selling products with over 2,000 five-star reviews and over 200,000 units sold just in 2022. So a fan favorite, to say the least. They literally could not keep these toning pads in stock for the first 2 years after they launched. So if you are looking for an easy first product to get started with, this is a must-have in your routine. Don't forget, you can use the code MAMA15 to get 15% off your first Barefaced purchase. That's M-O-M-A